This is Rackalicks After Hours.
Oh, hi. Welcome again. I'm feeling a little bit tired, slow, relaxed. Pete and I both have ailments of a kind. My neck is doing some very strange things, so I must keep very still so as to not upset it. And I just had my flu jab earlier today, so I've got a bruised arm. Pete's got a bit of a coldy cough situation, so it's very wintry here, isn't it, Pete? But welcome. It's episode 151. My, that's a few. Technology and music, that way round today. That's the podcast theme for you. But first, Pete, what have you been doing?
Well, my gas has reached new heights.
Not again.
Well, when does it ever stop?
There's no escape.
And especially as we've just had Black Friday and it's currently Cyber Monday.
It is a tricky one to escape.
Yes. So apart from all the things that I stated I was going to purchase, which was those Eurorack modules, which we talked about the week before last, possibly. And now, as you can see in front of you, the SSL Bus Plus has arrived.
Indeed it has.
In the studio. It hasn't been installed in any shape. Hasn't even been unsealed from its retail packaging.
It's still looking classy with that solid state logic. Does it say Oxford England logo on there?
Yes, I've still got the dilemma of exactly where it's going to go, and despite that, it's going to be quite a lot of work no matter where it goes.
Wiring, I imagine.
Well, I've got to move a lot of stuff around and wiring, as you say. Apart from that, I've been buying all sorts of other random stuff in all these with these offers that are thrust at us by various means of communication, email, text.
And they have succeeded with you.
They have somewhat. We at Rack Addicts are quite fond of spacey stuff. And when obviously we used to have Luke's spacey bit.
Yes, indeed.
In a past time. And I quite like having a little gander up at the stars and so forth, but unfortunately where we live, which is relatively close to London, there's an immense amount of light pollution.
Just a tad everywhere.
So it's not really worthwhile investing in a decent telescope because it'd be futile. But on occasions when there's a particularly glorious moon or something.
That does happen. We can see it.
Occasionally there are some decent stars to behold. I do want to have a better look. So to that end, I have purchased a pair of astronomical binoculars, large field binoculars.
I didn't know such a thing existed. Right, oh, you need a... That would explain the metal debris. So,
yes.
Tripod-styly.
Tripod-styly. Yes. So I've purchased a pair of Celestron Skymaster astronomical binoculars.
Them's the chaps.
And the particular ones I got were the 20x80s, which are...
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Yes, well, 20x80. Oh, yeah, that's a good... rating.
So I think that's one of the more powerful or the one with one of the pairs that provides most magnification.
Maybe it's something to do with the relationship of the lenses and other such bits and pieces that reside in there.
Possibly someone would like to put that in the comments.
Yeah, please let us know if we have binocular and telescope enthusiasts. We don't know what we're talking about, but we know what the moon looks like.
Yeah, so I've had a go with them, and you do see a lot more than you would do with the naked eye. So, and what I like about them is that they're just quick and easy, because even though they have to be mounted on a tripod, you can assemble the tripod and get it up and working really quickly. It's not like a telescope that you'd have to set up the equatorial mount and get it all calibrated.
Know what those things are.
Well, on a telescope, if you want to track objects, you need to have a mount that will actually pan the telescope to compensate for the rotation of the Earth.
Ah, sounds complicated.
Yeah, so if you want to keep looking at a fixed object, the telescope has to move and track with it. Now, old school kind of budget telescopes, you'd have a couple of kind of flexible winding kind of handly things, but a lot of them nowadays are all GPS and motorized, even the relatively smaller ones. Yeah, so it takes a lot of the grunt work out for you, but it's just all too much for this area when we, as I said earlier, we don't really have very good dark skies because of all the light pollution, especially because because there's a lot of motorways around here and they have that,
yeah, of course,
sodium, that orange sodium light that just gives that kind of orange glow everywhere. And we have some large airports relatively close as well, so a lot of light coming from there. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to utilizing them. In fact, I saw that it was quite a nice new moon this evening, so as long as it hasn't disappeared by the time we finish this podcast, I'm mostly going to have a look at that.
Gander, nice one.
Other than that, other weird things, I bought a routing table for the workshop.
Unexpected.
Yeah, it's been on the shopping list in my Amazon account for some time, and it was quite a dramatic drop in price, so I jumped at the chance of acquiring it. Have you been dabbling at all with any purchases?
Well, I certainly had temptations, put it that way, but I have resisted. I haven't been drawn into a purchase just yet, partially because I don't have any money, which is great. No, it's not. Anyway, I think the most tempting one was a site-wide 20% off at the place where I get my notebook bits and pieces. Do you remember I told you about that pen that was made of brass but had the kind of black lacquer on it, so it would brass like old film cameras?
Yes.
I was staring at it for a while today, but I resisted because it's expensive. Ooh, I'm safe. I'm safe from the temptation.
Well, on the other side of that, that's just going to empower me to really get a move on and get all the residual bits and pieces that I've talked about getting sold. One of the items I've listed for sale is the Roland FP30 that's been gracing this room for a number of years.
Yeah.
And immediately after I placed it on Facebook Marketplace...
Ooh, you went that way. Gotcha.
I was contacted by fraudsters.
Ah, what are their tactics?
Well, the tactic that I experienced was that they first ask if the item is still available for sale.
Seems innocuous.
And then they come back to you with this paragraph, which I believe they just cut and paste. Yeah. Because, yeah, I looked at some Reddit threads and did a search, and it seems to be quite a common scam.
Hmm.
And basically they go, and it's all in very bad English, so it gives you a kind of clue. And it says, I'm paraphrasing to a degree because I haven't got it in front of me, but it's something like, I'll take it. Unfortunately, I'm working, so I'll send a courier with cash.
Hmm.
And it just reads all wrong. You just know, if you've got any sense, that is, you know there is something not right about the whole approach. And I just searched on that phrase and immediately got lots of these threads about people talking about exactly the same thing. Mm. I get the impression it's something like they kind of lure you in with that, and then suddenly they need you to transfer some money to make the courier thing happen or something like that. It's, in some respects, it's similar to the Nigerian Prince type of scam.
I had some good ones of those when I checked the Modular Cafe inbox the other day. They were quite fun.
But I immediately just wrote to them and said, sorry, that's not happening. Please don't contact me again.
Got it.
And immediately reported it as a scam. There's a scam button that you can press and so forth. Nice. And deleted the contact in Facebook Messenger.
Excellent.
So I'm kind of, the heckles are up in some respects.
He's got his beady eye out for those scamsters.
So I've had a few other communications. Trouble is, I'm treating them all like scams now.
Oh, yeah.
I've just got to try and work through and filter all the dodgy ones out and only really focus on the ones that seem tangible. But however, that has been my week.
Wonderful stuff. My week has been pretty good on one front, which is I have partaken in hobbies and I have enjoyed it. Well, it's been a long time since that's happened without me lasting maybe 5 minutes and giving up and then resuming scrolling YouTube. But I've been doing a lot of painting. Been great. I finished way back, if you have an excellent memory and have been a long-time listener, we know you're out there. Thank you very much. I mentioned, do you remember a board game called Far Away?
I don't personally, but you've spoken about so many board games over the years. It's hard to keep up.
Indeed. This one is a space exploration thing where you're kind of working for Space Amazon in terms of the shady corporation angle. Anyway, I bought a couple of miniatures, 3D printed miniatures, which look like the spacesuits from the first Alien, to paint up and use instead of the little cardboard tokens. And I finally finished the second one of those, painted an extra couple of bits from my copy of Scythe, and it's been great. It's quite therapeutic until you make a horrible mistake and land a giant glob of blue on an ox or something. That happened to me. That was irritating. But no, that's been cool. I've also, at last, got properly stuck into the Scotland project. For people that don't remember what that is, I went to Islay, I tasted whiskey, I took lots of photos with my dad, there is audio, and it shall become some kind of art project thing. Either way, we finally picked the pictures that we like and will use. organised into the 3 days. I've done my scan conversion editing with some guidance from the Father Man, and that's progressing, which is great. And I've been making little loops of the ambient sound that I captured with the aid of iZotope RX9 Spectral Denoiser. Top tip for you with denoising. I didn't expect this to work, but it's a good one. I use a Zoom H5 with the built-in XY capsule situation. There's a decent amount of self-noise there, and because I had the gain cranked all the way up and I didn't have a quiet enough area, or I didn't think to find a quiet place to try and get just a sample recorded of just the noise, I had to improvise, and what I did was, in Logic, I grabbed two channels, panned them hard left and right, put a test oscillator on both with white noise, tried to match the level of the recording with the horrendous self-noise issue because it was quite delicate sounds, and then used that pair of channels to train the noise reduction algorithm on, and it was perfect. There we go. Worked really well. So, thank you, Zoom's preamps, I guess, for being just white noisy. Hooray! That was good. Top tip. Give it a go. I imagine it wouldn't work for everything, but I've had success. Actually, we spoke of Luke earlier. An ancient multimedia recommendation of his was, I think, Consider Phlebas, the book by Ian M. Banks from the Culture series. And I read it. It was great, and I'm now on the second one. And when I was at my parents' the other day, I discovered I also own the third one, which I think is called Accession, which I might have read, the seventh one, Use of Weapons, which I have read, and the 12th? Or the 14th? 13th? I don't know. I've got some random physical books from that series, but I'm enjoying it. So that's been great. Reading again. And that's been my week.
Excellent.
So, to the news, indeed. Lots of Eurorack bits and pieces. We have a quick one from Endorphins. They have revised the Air Streamer. It is now 4 HP. And it's pretty cool. And then I realised, oh, that's a bit disappointing, but we'll get there eventually. So 4HP, it is a looping envelope. There's a few of these around, so you've got your rise and fall controls. It'll do kind of LFO things, envelope-y things. You've got a toggle switch, which will give you cycle, ASR, attack, sustain, release. And in the middle, it's AD, just for a single shot thing. Did I say it was cycle on the left? I don't know. It will also do track and hold and sample and hold, which is interesting, and you have an exponential and logarithmic control. That sounds fairly normal. Where it gets a little bit more interesting, but not unique, is that it has a VCA built in. It has separate outputs for bipolar and unipolar voltages. End of cycle output, there's the VCA input, of course, and I guess one of those must be a VCA out as well, those two different outputs. Anyway, it also has, of course, your trigger and gate, or even reset input, and a volt per octave input. That suggests to me that you can cycle this thing, crank the fall and rise controls all the way left, so it produces a tone, and it may well track pitch. That's cool. How does it do it? It is digital, which was unexpected when there was a VCA involved, but potentially pretty cool. So that's the Airstreamer 4 from Endorphins. See if we got a price out there. Here we go. €189, dollars, and probably also pounds. We've got a couple from Instruo. There is a firmware 2.0 for the Lubad stereo tape style looper situation. I won't say much, because what you want to do if you're interested is go and watch the, I think it's nearly 2 hour video demo walkthrough from Jason from Instruo, and it seems like a pretty ground up overhaul of the thing, and it's quite powerful. But more interesting for me, and potentially for you, Pete, maybe perhaps, because it is black and gold and would look very nice in the scarab, is, ooh, did he pronounce it Cairn? Either way, it's spelt C-A with an accent, R-N. Cairn, Cairn, Cairn. I think it was Cairn.
Aren't most of their names for Instruo Gaelic?
I believe so.
So Cairn most probably is the right...
Sounds about flavourful enough.
Isn't it one of those round, sort of weird stone towers they have in Scotland or something like that?
That's
or
Cairn. A Cairn, in English at least, that has an I in it, but it could well be the same word.
And I don't know if that sort of applies to sort of rocky outcrops or something like that as well. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I think you can find out if you go on the Instruo website, because they do normally explain the names, but I didn't. Either way, this is super cool, and you've got to watch the video on it. As always, the attention to detail is superb. it has this pleasantly cascaded sort of look with its CV jacks and outputs and inputs and faders and whatever. Let's go through it. Four channel mixer, stereo output, master level control, and each of the four channels has a fader at the bottom. And what did Jason call it? He says they have, Jason calls them superpowers that each of the channels have. And it's pretty cool. Oh yeah, they all have pan pots on the bottom as well, which is pretty nice. The first channel has CV controlled panning. Awesome. Channel 2 has a CV input that will do VCA stuff for you, which is great. Channel 3 has a unipolar or bipolar switch, which can turn the fader into an attenuverter if you want it. And he explained how you can also use it as a ring modulator, but I'm not clever enough to understand how that one works. And channel 4 has an extra input, in fact, so it can be used as a crossfader, which is pretty cool. All of the channels have an input and an output, so you can use it as kind of a submixer, attenuvertery, attenuator type situation, or it can be kind of more of an end-of-chain mixer, which is nice. On the back of the module, you will also see stereo jacks, because you can daisy-chain with the supplied right-angle stereo jacks. There are also so many features on this one. Let's do the switches on the back, because there's 8 of them, and it's pretty cool. Per channel, you will have the option for AC and DC coupling, depending on whether you want to do all audio or potentially a bit more control voltage mixer-rooneying. And then you have control over the normaling, which you'll want to watch the hour and a half long video for to see how that works. Full or half normaled. There is also a ninth switch, which adds a soft limiting clipping type situation for a bit of natural compression if you want to do audio stuff. But wait, there's one more thing. There is a CV input for the master level VCA, so you can do interesting sidechain stuff with that, or voltage control that as a submixer. Oh my, he's got a big brain and he's made an incredibly well thought out little mixer-matron. It is, how big is it? 8 HP on this one? 8 HP. It's a lot of stuff in 8 HP. The downside. Place your bets on the downside.
How much?
£379.
That is a lot of pounds.
It's many pounds. I think it's fair enough, because that's a feature set and a half. Well done.
I'm always worried about these really dense feature set modules, because I always get the feeling that you will never use all those features, or maybe hardly use any of them, to be really honest.
Yeah, certainly dip switches are going to be set it, forget it, even the limiting or not. But I think it's great having all those different options for each channel with the, you know, the CV panning, the VCA. It's really cool.
Yes, and really expensive.
Unfortunately, but it's Instro. It's quality stuff. We're not done talking about mixers, though. Do you remember Pittsburgh did their, what they call it, the Safari series? They had some modules with fun animals,
yeah,
and
fun
stuff.
Yeah, fun graphics and things on the, yes.
A couple of other options, again, 8 HP, many times more cheaper. If we're talking modular grid prices, which I never know how accurate they are. Ooh, let's check this one on Rubberdub, because there's a handy link.
Well, that goes to a 404.
No, it goes to a showing zero results for the thing you wanted. Let's try post-modular.
It's always the same with modular grid. It hardly ever goes to the product.
It tried, but it didn't work, unfortunately. So it's saying $127. So that is cheap. So you have two options. So there's the Stereo Okapi, which has... Is that a goat? Looks like a goat, maybe. Anyway, that will be, I think they... What do they call it? Sort of console style, because it's got a soft clipping circuit in there. Four channels, mono channels, that is. But it's a stereo mixer, because you have pan controls, and each level control has a three segment little meter next to it, which I think is quite cool. You then have another variant, which is the 2+2 Okapi, which is a two-part mixer kind of situation. So it can be a four channel, it can be two channels, and instead of the pan control you get a mute, or sort of the plus or minus depending on which channel or which mix you want to put it to, still with the same soft clipping stuff. Kind of neat, a little bit different, and much cheaper than that Instruo.
Eurorack mixers do seem to be very expensive.
They definitely can be, especially when it comes to the more end of stage ones, where you want your effect sends and your pans and other kind of things.
Compared to normal sort of little desktop mixers, they're eye-wateringly more expensive.
Indeed. And last week, I think I said, ooh, the 1010 Blue Box. And you went, it's expensive. Rightly so. from the Lions forum, I think, I found an alternative, which has none of the digital effectsy stuff, but it's pretty good for what you get. It's made by Tangible Waves. It costs 159 euros. So Tangible Waves do that AE modular with the little breadboard pin things for the patching, which actually is not taking off, but it has a community that exists making sort of third-party interesting modules for it, and it's got Mutable Instruments clones in there, that kind of stuff, which is cool. Anyway, they have a thing called the VMix 10. This is a Korg Volca-sized unit. So you just give it a 9-volt input. It then has outputs on the same kind of, you know, the barrel kind of jack things. Yeah, so it's 9-volt center positive, 9-volt center positive out. So unfortunately, it won't be a nice hub to power guitar pedals unless you get a little polarity invertery situation. I'm sure those exist. But it is a 10-channel mixer with two effect sends. So mono jack in, this is sort of, I'll go vertically on these channels. So you get your little mono jack in, you have effects 1, effects 2, pan, level, mute, and you get 6 of those. You then have two stereo mini jack connections with level and mute. You have VU metery things, that's a 5-segment on your main output. You have a headphone amp, a stereo mini jack main out, and a mono send stereo return with level control for your sends. Now that's a pretty good deal, I reckon. Tidy little package as well.
Have you got a picture there?
I do. I can't really make it bigger because it's one of those zoom in things. It's not a looker, I'll put it that way, but I think functional, tiny, and budget friendly. Not a massive picture, but there you go.
The black one.
The black one.
So is it Eurek compatible or is it a desktop?
So it's a desktop unit, but let's check on what it does if you just throw Eurek voltages or Eurek levels at it. I reckon you're just going to chuck line level in there. So you might need some little, either, what do they call them, like a 0 HP attenuator just to turn it down a bit, or some other solution. But it's designed mainly for line level desktop units like Volcas and other small synths.
Yeah, it did sort of look very Volca-ish in the picture. But Volca does have its own mixer.
Yeah, and it's like 3 channels, has speakers in it, and is universally hated. Or I hope it is, because it's awful. Please don't buy it.
Yeah, the Volcas are in short supply as well.
Damn. I do like the Volcas. Especially they did the new Volca FM, just gave it loads more voices. And it's awesome. Love it. Guess what? It's yet another Eurorack module. This one is quite cool. So, you know the 3340 chip?
Yes.
The classic in so many things. And is the modern version actually produced by Behringer?
I think there's something to do with Behringer going on. I know that it was the widow of the designer.
This is the Curtis chip, isn't it?
Yeah, so Mr. Curtis, I don't know what his first name was.
Who knows?
His widow gave permission for the chip to be reproduced. And I actually bought one a couple of years ago from Thonk.
Oh, yeah.
For my SH-101.
Uh-huh.
I thought that might be the problem. It wasn't the problem.
But it still worked.
Yes, it did work. I was able to scope it and see all the waveforms you can get out of it, including the one that they didn't have on the original SH-101, but Behringer subsequently did put on their tribute, I want to say.
Well, Pete, that was the best segue you could possibly have made, because this module, it's called the Apollo View Oscillator. Who makes this? Wait, no. It's Apollo View, I imagine, is the brand. It's the Oscillator, because they went, you know what? This is a great chip. We're going to give every single thing that it can possibly make to the user. So, what do we got? That looks like 10 HP to me. Yes, it is. You get a volt per octave in, and that's it. I'm joking. You have exponential and linear FM inputs with attenuators, a pulse width modulation input. You have positive, negative, and soft sync. I honestly don't know what those kind of things will be. Maybe positive and negative, it's syncs on the rise or the fall, something like that. I don't know. You then have your outputs. You have a square sine mix, sine on its own, triangle, pulse, shark tooth, saw, PWM saw, and a sub, which can be -1, -2 octaves, or there's kind of a secret extra thing that I think it can do. Let me find what that is. And then you have a second 2 octave down, but a different duty cycle to get a different kind of sound. And then you then also have an LFO / audio rate toggle. And when it's in the LFO mode, you can still chuck it into audio rate if you wanted. Oh my. It does all the things that are possible and has a very nice red LED situation going on the front.
Okay, very aesthetic.
If you're a Curtis fan, this could be the one for you.
And do we have a price for it?
Ooh, it's more money than I was expecting. But there is a DivKid demo, so of course you need, that is, required watching. Go and check out the DivKid demo. 16 patches for oscillators, the Oscillator by Apollo View, 369 squiddly pops.
Ouch.
Yes. For, I don't want to call it a basic oscillator, because it's got loads of cool things, but there was definitely a synth that came out. Oh, yeah. Do you remember when the Analog Solutions Colossus first came out? And we were talking about it on the podcast, because how could we not? The thing's awesome. And we saw, oh, what is it, 10 oscillators or something like that? And we went, oh, they're just kind of Curtis chips.
3340s.
And we thought, oh, that's a bit disappointing.
Well, it's a very...
Should we have been disappointed?
Not really. Well, the Prophet 5 is Curtis chips, including the re-release.
Yeah, indeed. Are there filters based on Curtis chips as well?
Yeah, different chip.
But same designer.
Yes.
So yes, maybe we shouldn't have been so harsh back in dear. But here it is. If you want to shell out 369 squids, you can have everything that a 3340 is capable of in quite a handsome package.
I think the issue we had about the Colossus was that it's kind of is a tribute to the ARP 2500.
Yeah, good point.
Which I would imagine would have had discrete oscillators.
That is probably true.
Rather than chips.
I think, given the miserable expense of a Colossus, you can only imagine what it would have been if it's all hand-wired discrete component, or maybe not hand-wired, but discrete component stuff.
But I could understand why they would have put 3340s in the modern incarnation.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
So, I hadn't heard of Apollo View. They have three modules, Rabbit Hole, Curiouser, and the Oscillator, and they all have a similar red LED kind of thing. It's a good brand image, that one. Maybe not for everybody, but it's cohesive.
Very striking.
And what is it? This Rabbit Hole, no idea what it is. It has gain, tube, octave, tone controls, and a tube in the middle, so I think you can probably make an educated guess. What's this Curiouser, I wonder? Ah, it's an expander for the other thing.
I'm always amazed at all these new, or relatively new, modular companies starting up and new modules coming out, while we're seeing some really long-time producers throwing the towel in.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Life finds a way or something.
What makes you get up in the morning and think, I know, I'm going to develop a new Eurorack module and try and market the thing?
I imagine all of the people, the little ones and the new ones, can break even selling and releasing modules. But in terms of the actual design, support and stuff, they've got to be doing it on the side. Otherwise, how?
Yes, exactly. How? How can you make it into a tangible business?
Yeah, which is admirable. And we thank you for your incredible passion in a bit of a niche area that we like. Finally, a small little doodad from Critter and Guitari. I will confess, I don't know what the difference is between this one and the Organelle, which is one of their more famous ones, but you've got a little tiny pocket synthesizer with a speaker, and you have six sound engines, chiptune stuff, analog-style things, it's all digital, of course, drum samples, physical modeling-type bits, with their charming little wooden keyboards, MIDI, open sourceness, aluminium enclosure. This is a Kickstarter, and it's $295 to get in there. I will be honest, I watched the video, and it did not sell it very well at all. It was an aesthetic, a brand aesthetic that I think has an appeal. I'm not a fan, personally. It was really super, super low-budget production, probably filmed on a smartphone, and the sound demos were awful. Don't get it. But if you're a Critter and Guitari fan, go check it out. There's a video. There's a Kickstarter. That's it. That's all I've got. All the news that I could find that I cared about. Anyway, you know what that means, Pete? It's time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I'm actually ready to go. For once, I am going to repeat a recommendation, unfortunately, because I have tickets to go and see this person, a late birthday present from my sister, thank you very much. It is the comedian Alistair Beckett-King. Beckett-King, hyphenated. The pale ginger man with very absurd and dry humour. And given that I like Monty Python, it makes sense that that appeals to me, the absurd stuff. He's on YouTube and has plenty of excellent little skits, and he seems to know what he's doing with visual effects as well, which is quite fun. Alistair Beckett King, that's the guy. What have you got, Pete?
Right, this week I've got a little YouTube channel that'll be right up your street.
Ooh, I'm on YouTube already. Tell me, what have we got?
Okay, it is called Bonsai Relief. Are you getting the little pun there in the name?
I didn't because I spelt it right, but now I love it. Yeah, excellent.
Right, there is only 5 videos on this channel, but they have been filmed and edited very well, and there's a certain amount of, I would almost say, some ASMR about them.
I can imagine. They look great.
Anyway, this gentleman gets what initially looked like just little ragged bushes that you get in pots from the garden centre, and he turns them into absolutely wonderful bonsai trees.
They are wonderful looking.
And just watching a couple of the videos, I got the whole bonsai thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew there was a lot of intervention, but I didn't know how physical they got with the actual trees to force them to look like miniature trees rather than some sort of sapling bush or something like that instead.
Yeah.
I hadn't really realised about all the wire that wrapped around the trunks to contort them into the twisted, knurled...
Yeah, the classic kind of S-shape thing that you will have seen. There's got to be so much patience involved as well, because you wire it, might take a day to do the thing, and then you have to wait years for it to conform to that shape before you can, you know, remove the wire in some cases.
Also, I got drawn in with all the assortment of specialist tools as well.
Ooh, they are quite
sort
lovely.
Of miniature little blades and chisels and snipping things and so forth. I didn't realise they actually skin the bark off as well. And do all
it's a certain style, I think.
And then if the plant or bush has some dead wood or dead branches, they make a feature of those by taking the bark off completely, and then they paint them in some sort of application that bleaches them white, so there's a contrast between the actual dead wood and the live wood and so forth, and it was wonderful.
Sounds like another case of somebody with oodles of expertise from thousands of years of, maybe not thousands of years of training, but what a pleasure it must be.
Well, I believe it's an English chap, and he's relatively young, although he does have a young son as well, so I don't know, mid-30s possibly. And yes, I can feel myself going off to the garden centre quite shortly and buying a small juniper bush.
Oh yeah, and getting into the wiring or whatever yourself.
And I'm going to possibly do some research and find where you buy all the little tools as well.
Well, there's Heron's Bonsai if you go towards Kent but don't actually go to Kent somewhere. I think it's still technically Surrey. Anyway, Heron's Bonsai in Surrey. But yeah, if you do, count me in. I'd love to do that. That'd be great fun.
But there's no need. You just watch a few of these videos and do it for yourself and save a lot of money. You can convert a £15 bush into a £200 bonsai.
Yeah, I mean, all of the expense of bonsai ends up just being the time. The expertise, to an extent, is pretty negligible in the cost of the end thing. It's, they will have spent, you know, sort of a few minutes here and there over 10 years or something honing this shape. But obviously, you just got to wait. That's where the money goes.
Yes. I hadn't realised it actually came from China initially.
Oh, does it?
And it was then adopted by the Japanese, who refined it even further, which is not uncommon. I think a lot of things originated in mainland China and migrated out to other regions.
Yeah.
But yes, so that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Bonsai Relief.
With the pun. You can work it out. Thank you, as always, for spending your valuable time listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. It really is a great compliment, and we thank you. And hopefully, you can find us on social media at Rack Addicts UK. Let us know about whatever it was that we were talking about earlier. I'm sure you'll remember. But for now, farewell.